He's now heard on 437 stations in the United States and Canada. He's on the internet worldwide. He has approximately 12 million listeners. He's on all night long. 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. are his broadcast hours. Many times you hear him late at night, in the early hours of the morning, late evening. He's on. Where did all this start? Where did you come from suddenly?
I came from the world of rock and roll. I was in radio for, Larry, about 20 years.
A jock.
A jock, that's right. And then I finally got out, up and down the dial. You know, I got fed up with the whole gypsy existence, and I left radio. And I went and I worked in microwave for about 6 years, and I built a cable company. And then I got bored. Have you ever tried to stay away from this?
Yeah, well, it's impossible, isn't it?
It's impossible.
So why come back in as an all-night host? Or is that the way you came back in?
There was a radio station, a 50,000-watt station in Las Vegas. And one day they came to me as I worked in cable, and they said, gee, wouldn't you like to do a little talk radio again? How about doing, you know, a little weekend work? And that was the beginning of the end. I was sucked back in. Pretty soon, there I am, doing a daytime show, asking, you know, this 50,000-watt station covers about 13 states at night. I'd love to have a shot at that. And they gave me a shot. And I did that for 10 years. And then we began syndication. And here I am today. So I was sucked back into radio.
Why all night?
You did an all-night show, too.
I started.
You began that way, right?
Yeah.
I love all night. And I would never leave it. And I think there's something special about the nighttime and nighttime people.
How did you get into, for want of a better term, the bag you got into of things occultish?
Evolution.
Things different.
Evolution. A slow evolution. I didn't do it quickly. These are things that fascinate me. Absolutely fascinate me. So I would slowly inject them as I was doing radio programs. And I found the audience reacted well. I enjoyed doing it. The ratings reflected the fact that it was working. And so it was a slow evolution.
Do you think it works more at night than, say, if you were doing the same thing?
I don't think it would work at all during the day.
Because?
Not a chance. Because nighttime people are different. When nighttime comes, the buzz of the day slows down. The phones aren't ringing. You're not going crazy in the office. You have time to sit down and think about esoteric things.
And the attention span's greater.
Much greater.
Let's run down some things. You believe aliens have abducted some people on this planet?
I believe it's possible.
Yes. Believe Whitley Strieber?
I do. Whitley's a good friend.
Crop circles?
Undeniable. Doug and Dave with a chain and board? Well, yes, that accounts for some of them. Not 10-acre crop circles with 192 rings.
Ghosts?
Absolutely.
People call about ghosts?
All the time.
They hear them? See them?
Yes. This is, my audience will understand what this is. What you have in your hand is bismuth and magnesium. And it is from Roswell. This is ostensibly from the crash at Roswell, New Mexico. This has been examined by just about every rare metals, exotic metals manufacturer in the country. It's been to Sandy. It's been to all the great labs of the country. Nobody knows how it's made. Nobody knows how it's kept together. It should be pure dust. Nobody knows where it came from. Most likely explanation, it was put together in space. Now, what you're holding in your hand is impossible. That bismuth and magnesium could be put together is simply impossible. Now, by the way, we had it tested at Carnegie in Washington, and I forget the type of radiation, but it's 60 times normal, so you might want to put it back.
I think that's a good idea. And what do I do with this?
You take it home and you put it up in the closet somewhere.
And someday. Anyway,
and
let's go.
You are about to have your last child, right?
Las Vegas, Nevada. Hello.
Las Vegas.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Art.
Hi.
Mr. Bell, I would like to ask you if you feel the world, or the U.S. in particular, is responsible enough to handle the knowledge of extraterrestrials.
I think that a lot of people, probably like yourself, are responsible enough to handle the information. But I think that if 10 or 20% of the people are not responsible enough to handle it, then, unfortunately, you may recall that in our own revolution, it takes a very small percentage of people to not be capable of handling a situation for it to get out of control.
And that is usually the reason given by the believers as to why the government doesn't want to tell you.
Well, there was something called the Brookings Report, Larry, which said essentially that religious institutions and all the other great institutional beliefs that we have would very likely crumble if we found out that we are not who we thought we were.
Wouldn't you guess most people would like to hear that? That there's something else out there? Wouldn't you guess that?
Most people believe there is something else out there, but I'm not sure that they want to hear that our ancestors were little gray guys.
I was listening to your show last night, Art, and you were talking to Whitley.
Yes.
About the material that you showed Larry this evening.
That's right.
And I have two questions.
Sure.
One is, can you tell us where you obtained the material?
Yes, it was sent.
Leave it in the glass and put it back.
Absolutely, okay. It was sent to me. This was sent to me by a source in South Carolina, a military source who claimed that his grandfather retrieved it from Roswell. And I've got all that paperwork.
For the benefit, that's an unidentified flying object supposed to have landed with bodies, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, second question, ma'am.
And the second question is, why is the government covering up so much about Roswell?
Well, the answer to that might be why they're covering up so much about a lot of things, and that is that the answers to things like this may lead to explanations that the government is not ready for us to have, and that we may not, in all honesty, be ready ourselves.
Now, this is a material not on this earth.
All indications are that this was not made on Earth, could not have been made on Earth. The best exotic labs in this country have tried to reproduce it, and they have not done so.
What happened in Paris?
I talked to a lot of people about out-of-body experiences. They're called OBEs. And I've been to the edge of an OBE before, Larry. Have you ever been in bed, sort of lying there, and you feel a kind of a vibration and a buzzing begin? Sometimes you snap out of it, and you feel like you're falling. Almost everybody's had that experience.
Or you can't get up.
Or you're paralyzed. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the beginning of an OBE, Larry. And I've been there several times, and I'm a control freak. You know, I do a radio show, and I do my own board, and I control everything. I control the phones. And I'm a control freak, so I would never let it go. But I went to Paris with my wife, and all of a sudden, I wasn't doing a radio show every day. I didn't have a deadline. I relaxed. I let my guard down.
And
I was lying in bed, awake, and instantly, with acceleration that I can only describe as incredible, but you didn't feel it as though the lips pressing back, you know, going up in the shuttle, I was above Paris. In what I can only describe as total ecstasy. There are really not words to describe what I felt. And it surprised
me. No body.
You weren't
in a body.
No, absolutely not. It shocked me so much that I snapped right back into my body. Right back into my body. And here's something you don't do. I was so excited. I was so shocked that I woke my wife up. And I said, guess what happened to me? I said, and then I told her the whole story. Don't do that. Don't wake up your wife to tell her that kind
wagons,
of story.
Right. Well, couldn't it have been, though, you flew over Paris, you having a dream sequence? Because in dreams,
I have dreams every other day, every week. I know what dreams are. This was no dream. I was out of my body.
Do you remember going back into it?
It was instantaneous. And the reason I went back so quickly, I believe, there was no warning that it was coming. It was utterly spontaneous because I had my guard down. And I snapped back into my body because I was so shocked at what had occurred.
Which leads you to think what? All right, that plus this equals means.
Well, it may not mean anything. It may be that our brains, in other words, it's a function of a living human brain. Does it mean, somebody told me that's as close as you're ever going to be to death. And I don't know if that's true. I don't know that that means there's life after death. So you see, I really am a skeptic. But it may mean that it's a function of a living, my living human brain.
Some people near death report things like that, right?
Absolutely.
When they don't die and they come back.
Absolutely. But short of one a couple thousand years ago, nobody's come back after 3 or 4 days to tell us, you know.
When you got into this, did you become a believer or a reporter?
I'm still a reporter. I don't think you could call me a believer. And everybody's always asking for proof. Do you believe in aliens? Well, I believe They could be here.
Are they here?
No, I can't say that.
But a lot of your callers describe it, right?
Of course. I've interviewed abductees. I've interviewed doctors who have taken implants out of people's hands and other parts of their body. So, sure.
Now, if you question it, do you believe that they believe it? How do you separate that
I
from
believe
the charlatan?
That some of them believe it. How do I separate it? I don't. In other words, I assume that my audience is made up of adult people. And so I present them with hard science. I present them with soft stories. And I allow them to make the decision.
This, all of it, Art, then, from your standpoint, has been self-educated to you, right? In other words, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have said, I have this wild interest in UFOs.
Not a chance.
So the audience developed it for you? I mean,
well,
were you taking calls one night?
I'll tell you what developed it for me. I saw one. That's what really developed it for me.
What did you see?
Fortunately, I was not by myself. I was with my wife, and this was during the time when I was commuting from my home to Las Vegas, a 65-mile one-way drive, 120 miles every day.
You live remote.
I live in as a matter of fact, do you remember when you did that show, sitting out a desk like this in the middle of the desert?
Never forget it.
Never forget it. Area 51.
Special for 2 hours.
I live
Area
just
51.
That's
you
right.
live near there?
I live just over the mountain from that
There's
area.
There's nothing near there.
I have always wondered, when you were sitting there, was it getting colder and colder?
Whoa, colder.
I thought
well,
so.
We started in the afternoon. By the time it got to be night, I was freezing to death. And it was, but there's nothing there. I mean,
nothing there.
You wait for the lights of Vegas. Where could you possibly live there?
I can see the lights of Vegas just barely from where I live. They kind of light up one little segment of the sky. Otherwise, it's clear, beautiful. The stars are a million deep. Milky Way is from one side all the way to the other.
You broadcast from there?
I do.
From your house?
From home.
All right. What do you see that night? What's happening?
All right. I'm on the way back from Las Vegas, and we're probably about a quarter mile from home. To give you the setting, it's almost a full moon. It's quiet. It's so quiet that you can hear crickets at a quarter mile. That quiet. We're on the last leg on the way home, and my wife said, "What the hell is that?" She was in the passenger seat, and she caught something coming up from behind. I said, "I don't know." And I pulled the car over to the side of the road. We both got out, and here coming up from behind us, at about, I would guess, 150 feet, is a triangular object with three lights on it, three solid lights on it. One, I believe, was strobing in the front. It had to be about 150 feet from one point of the triangle to the next. It was monstrous. And
how far off the ground?
About 150 feet. It looked so big and so close that I could have thrown a rock at it.
No kidding. Are you scared?
No, scared is not the right word. We watched it come up from behind us, Larry. And it came directly over our heads. Close Encounters of the Stars and the Moon went away. And it made no sound. As it passed over our heads, you could hear the crickets at a quarter mile, Larry. Still, no propulsion, no noise, going, I guess, about 30 miles an hour. I was in the Air Force. I know what aerodynamic flight requires. And trust me, this thing was defying gravity.
Of course, the explanation would be that's an experimental Air Force base that's secret to everyone, and that probably is something they're working on.
Then, maybe so. But if we have anti-gravitic craft, that's almost as big a story as if they are here.
This defied the law of gravity.
Absolutely. 30 miles an hour, floating, not flying. And we watched it, we stood and we watched it go over the valley for about 5 minutes, kind of with our mouths on, open.
Why did that not make you a believer that there is something somewhere else?
It did make me a believer that there are things that we don't know about. Now, it could be ours, it could be theirs, but the way I figure it, either way, it's a big, big story.
Yeah, if it's ours, it's a big story. If it's theirs, it's
If it's ours and we have anti-gravity, it's a big story. Mm-hmm. And they're keeping a lot from us. They developed the F-117 stealth up there. Well, what have they been doing since?
You're into things different, right? Would you say, is that correct way?
No, I don't think so. I think that what I'm into is part of life. I think it's as much of the things that you can't touch, the things that you're not sure of, they're as much a part of our life as the air that we're breathing right now. It's just that a lot of people don't notice. They don't take the time.
You don't screen the calls, right?
I don't screen
calls. I didn't either for all those years. I've never screened a call till television.
Is that right?
Yeah, but it's far much more fun. Why
it
screen
is.
A call?
My view is that if the talk show host is talented enough, that you can take any call, no matter how strange, how weird, and make it fun, entertaining, informational, something or another. It's just, I enjoy not, I don't want to know what's coming.
Certainly, neither do I. Much more spontaneous. Right?
Absolutely.
Well, the screen is screens, but I don't want to know what the subject is. All I want to know, all I ever want to know is the city. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that mattered. But you, in other words, when I hear your show, it's a happening, right? It's happening then. Nobody has filtered anything.
That's right.
Right?
A lot of times, I will obviously prepare. I spend about as much time preparing and knowing the news that I end up not talking about, and whatever it is that I got prepared to talk about half the time or better.
Do you set a subject, or can anybody call on anything?
Anybody can call in anything. And believe me, that's what I get. I get time travelers. I get people claiming to be immortal. I get some pretty strange people.
We'll
but they're fun.
What's it like to broadcast out of your house?
You know, I used to commute taking about 2 hours of my time every single day.
To a Vegas station?
And I thought that when I came home, when they built the studio in my home, I said, hey, guys, how about building a studio in my home? And they did. And I thought, great, I buy back 2 hours of my life. Wrong. Now everybody knows where to find me. And so it's work from the moment I get up until I actually go to bed. Because everybody knows where to find me. Before, I had those two solitary hours to
by
drive
yourself,
back and forth. That's right.
Also, isn't it kind of weird to be broadcasting? I'd feel weird broadcasting out of where I sleep.
Well, I don't sleep in there. I sleep on the other side of the house.
But I mean, it's the same area, right?
It's a converted bedroom.
Well, sometimes weird things happen. Tell me about that astronomer calling, saying he saw something following the Hale-Bopp comet.
The Hale-Bopp
That turned
mess.
Out to be a false, right?
Actually, what happened is Professor Courtney Brown at Emory University...
In Atlanta.
And an associate of his in Atlanta, yes, that's right, came to me and said, guess what? We have photographs of an object following Comet Hale-Bopp. It's from a top 10 university professor. I said, okay, fine. Good source. Send me the photographs. I want to see them. So they sent me the photographs. I had Whitley Strieber also sent the photographs, to be sure. I talked to the physicist student that was associated, Prudence Calabrese. I had a lot to go on, Larry. And so I broke the story. Yes, there's something that apparently seems to be following Hale-Bopp, and I put a photograph of that up.
How was it proven wrong?
It was proven wrong when, in January... now, this is a couple of months later, mid-November to mid-January. I finally got fed up of this so-called university professor not coming forward with his story. And so I called Courtney. I said, Courtney, I'm going to take the photograph and I'm going to publish it on my website. And he said, oh, don't do that. He called me and begged me, please don't do that. He said, it'll hurt your credibility. And I said, no, if I do nothing, that's going to hurt my credibility. So I put it up on the website. And it wasn't 24 hours, I got a call from Dr. Oliver Hynod at the University of Hawaii, who said, guess what? That photograph had to have been taken from this telescope within a 10-minute period of time. We can prove it, because here's our photograph with the stars in the exact same position relative to the comet.
Photograph.
It was fraudulent. So I put the fraud up on the website right next to the real photograph, and it was obvious they were the same photograph, but something was drawn in behind.
Hello, Art Bell.
Hi there.
I'm an Art Bell addict. I wish you'd do a program on Art Bell addiction. But I also wondered, what do you think might be the connection between Stonehenge and the Miami Circle? Is it the same type of sighting, but just smaller stones?
All right. The lady refers to a circle. There's a developer named Bauman down in Miami. The poor fellow, I kind of feel sorry for him. He had a $100 million project. He began clearing the land in Miami for this $100 million project, and they found what appears to be a sacred circle. And they had
just like a chalk or a circle of what?
A circle that resembles, in some ways, Stonehenge. And it was about to be plowed under. The big D9 cats were sitting there, and they were about to do it. And we began a campaign trying to save it. And they went to court with eminent domain, and I'll be damned if they haven't saved it. So we had kind of a phone thing going to try to save the Miami Circle.
For what reason?
Because we don't know what it is, Larry, and to plow this thing down, this thing that could be extremely old, very old, ancient, tell us a lot about who we are, our own beginnings. You just don't bring in a bulldozer.
Well, but what did Bauman do?
Well, I don't think he's a real happy camper about all of that. But we need a little time. I want some time to study
these kind of
the
things,
is
to, so we know more about why
we're
here, who we are.
Who we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what all this is about.
It's what everything is about. By the way, there's one other elegant explanation for the possibility of God. I talked to you about the God part of the brain. That's one idea. Another idea is that there was, you know, our nation's best theoretical physicists, like Dr. Kaku, who I frequently interview, believe in the Big Bang. In other words, there was something.
There was something.
Sure, you bet. Something smaller than a quark, which we can't even measure right now and find, suddenly became all that is. Well, that doesn't work for me. In my imagination, I can't imagine something that small becoming all that now is. And frankly, they can't explain it either. So, imagine, Larry, that there's an entity. Before there's anything, before there's time or space, there's an entity. This entity is alone. This entity, in effect, blows itself up, and now becomes all that is, including you. So God is within all of us. Elegant.
Who made the entity? We'll be back.
I have a simple question to ask you, okay?
All right.
Everybody's always saying, well, where's the proof? People that claim with a... It's a fantastic story that they've been abducted and the implants put in them, okay? Now, when they've removed these implants and they've been identified as material that is not of this world, then doesn't that tell you simply right then and there it comes from out of this world?
Are there lots of things that like the thing you gave me, that are not of this world?
No, there are not a lot of those things. Those things
so
are
the
very...
the caller's wrong
those things
when he says
very
they
rare,
take,
he,
they
he
find...
Talked, he talked about proof. Everybody's always demanding... proof. Well, these are not necessarily things that we can easily prove. You're about to have a new baby, right?
You bet.
And,
maybe as we speak.
And I'm sure it's on your mind. The phone could ring. It could happen any time. And your wife, you love your wife.
Very much.
Prove it.
Prove I love her?
Yeah.
You don't know what I go through. She's the best.
That's a line from Contact.
And,
but I mean,
it goes through. It's no exception for me to love her, because anyone.
There you are. But I mean, if I were to demand proof.
Oh, well, prove there's electricity. Now you don't see the waves going through.
There you are. You can't. These are things you can't prove. It doesn't mean they're not real.
Come,
it means you can't prove them.
How come the UFOs, which obviously have intelligence, I mean, it could stop in midair, they travel against gravity, they only go to Karakoka, Wyoming? Why don't they come to Times Square? Washington, L.A.,
well,
you come
right.
to Beverly Hills,
right.
We buy it.
Here you are. When you go outside, when you walk outside, you look at traffic so that you don't have an accident. You look at the people that are looking at you. You look at it. When I came into the studio tonight, a policeman was going down the street drinking a cup of coffee, and his car was on fire. His car was on fire. Smoke billowing everywhere. Fire engines finally, 10 minutes later, screaming down. Well, this guy was just merrily going down the street drinking
Starbucks
a coffee.
Starbucks commercial.
In other words, Larry, we don't pay attention to what's above us. We don't look up a lot, do we?
And in Pakakula, Wyoming, they do.
Well, occasionally you can't help it. You know,
How do we know?
The first alien contact that we think we had was in Roswell. And it was a crash. Now, where did that occur? That occurred near the 509th Bomb Group. And what did they do? They were the group that dropped what? The first atomic bomb. So if they are out there, when the mushroom clouds began forming, I think that would have got their attention. Don't you think
I would say.
At that point, they would say, what are they doing down there?
When you do all you do and you talk to all the people you all talk to, I know you said earlier you were a reporter, but do you also become...
I'm not a reporter. I'm a talk show host.
Do you become conspiratorially oriented? A lot of talk show hosts live off it. I think they think Vince Foster.
A conspiracy is not the first thing that I leap to. Not the first
not
possibility.
The, okay.
I like jumping to the most logical possibility. And I hesitantly go to a conspiracy theories. But are there conspiracies? Oh, yes, of course there are. Sure.
Why are we so interested in the paranormal, you think?
Well, because, Larry, when we're done here on Earth, we all want to know that there's something else out there, don't we? And that is the land of the paranormal. And if there are ghosts, then that's proof that there's life after death, right?
So would you say the most unexplainable thing is death?
Of course it is.
The thing we know the least about. We have
faith.
And
the thing, as I said earlier, the thing we fear the most, the thing we quietly contemplate the most, of course it's death. Because cosmically, we're here not that long.